Kentucky's most advanced medical care is UK Healthcare. It's time now for UK Healthcare's Health Talk Show, Advances and Insights. Here's Melanie Cole.
Atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is the most common cardiac arrhythmia, affecting nearly over 2 million Americans, and has been linked to an increased risk of stroke. My guest today is Dr. Theodore Wright. He is a cardiothoracic surgeon with the University of Kentucky Healthcare. Welcome to the show, Dr. Wright. So tell us first, what is atrial fibrillation, or AFib, so that we have a working understanding of how we got it and how it's treated?
Sure, absolutely. In atrial fibrillation, again, you discussed, you're absolutely right. That's the most common arrhythmia present out there. It affects probably 5 million people. We think it's going to expand to probably 15 million people over the next 10, 15 years. The idea is that the atrium, which is the top chamber of the heart, communicates with the ventricle, the bottom chamber of the heart. And usually there's a 1-2 punch, a lub-dub that you may have heard if you ever heard the sound of the heart or an auscultatory sound. In atrial fibrillation, there's a disconnect. The atrium, which is the top part of the heart, it fibrillates. There's scar tissue, there's triggers that cause that atrium to not beat in a regular fashion. And when that happens, it doesn't communicate well with the ventricle, the lower part of the heart. And that creates essentially what we call a dysrhythmia. And for patients, what they experience is palpitations. They'll experience shortness of breath because the heart isn't functioning the way it should. The downside, the biggest downside, is stroke. When the atrium is not beating the way it normally does, blood can pool in the heart. And when that blood can pool, that blood can cause clot, and that clot can go places. It can go to your brain. It can go to your hand. It can go to your leg and cause ischemia. The most common thing, again, is a stroke. That folks will see weakness, inability to find words, and that's the most devastating problem with atrial fibrillation for us.
So you mentioned that, you know, maybe a little heart palpitations or fluttering. What are some symptoms that might even send anyone to the doctor to find out that they have AFib?
Sure. So shortness of breath is one. You find that you just can't walk as far as you normally do. Palpitations, again, this physical shuddering in your chest, as you can feel this fluttering. Also, sometimes people have this kind of feeling of impending doom, like they just don't feel quite right. Now, unfortunately, the one very common symptom is actually no symptom at all, and they can walk around in atrial fibrillation and not even realize it at all, and their first presentation could be a stroke. And that's the most devastating, again, unfortunate possibility for some folks.
So once someone comes to see you, how is it diagnosed?
Sure, absolutely. The gold standard is an EKG, an electrocardiogram, where you actually see the heart rhythm. You'll see an irregular heartbeat on the EKG. That's the most sensitive portion. Obviously, on physical exam, someone can listen to the heart and see that the heartbeat is irregular. But again, the EKG is the gold standard.
So what is your first line of defense, Dr. Wright? Is this something that people can live a long time with?
Sure. Most folks, again, they'll exhibit symptoms. Sometimes it can be somewhat symptomatic, be short of breath. In those folks, usually what they do is a cardioversion, or actually shock the heart to get it back into rhythm. It's not a treatment, but at least it gets you out of the rhythm so that further management or further treatment can be undertaken. That usually means medications to control the rhythm, or if you can't control the rhythm, at least control the rate, so that the heart function is not as affected, because the heart rate is closer to a normal rate, less than 100 ideally.
So when we look at various medications, if someone has AFib and you put them on medication as something that you might do near the beginning, can they plan on having to take beta blockers or calcium channel blockers, Coumadin, something for the rest of their lives?
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. You know, the idea is that you want to maintain a normal sinus rhythm, and medications, unfortunately, may be the only way to do that for some folks. And again, you talked about Coumadin or anticoagulation, which is a mainstay of treatment, again, to prevent that stroke risk. Even if someone who's in a normal sinus rhythm, they could break through. Unfortunately, medications are notoriously not 100% effective. What you don't want to do is have someone have a stroke because they feel confident that they're being treated appropriately with medications, but meanwhile they're having episodes, periodic episodes of atrial fibrillation that they don't realize or don't notice. And in those groups of patients who are symptomatic or who medications are not totally effective, fortunately there are other means. We've understood, we've learned a lot about atrial fibrillation. We know what triggers atrial fibrillation, what drives it, and there are actually anatomic triggers that can propagate atrial fibrillation. And those things can be identified. There are cardiologists, electrophysiologists who use catheter-based approaches to identify those drivers within the heart and ablate them using energy, heat or heat energy primarily. And also there's some surgical means of doing that as well, particularly in folks who have long-standing atrial fibrillation that's been refractory, again, to medications and for people who are symptomatic and have been for some time.
So tell us about some of those less invasive surgical ablations. If someone has just atrial fibrillation only, they don't have any underlying other disease situations, comorbidities going on, what kind of procedure are we talking about?
Sure, sure. There are two basic tracks. There are folks, again, who are symptomatic and despite medications. And again, we can identify these triggers that can cause atrial fibrillation. One procedure that we do is called the mini-maze procedure. What we are able to do with that three or four small incisions on both sides of the chest, isolate the pulmonary veins. The pulmonary veins can be the source of 90% of triggers for atrial fibrillation. What we're able to do is isolate those triggers electrically from the rest of the heart using heat energy, causing scar tissue. And that scar tissue keeps the what it does is prevents the propagation of these signals from the pulmonary veins to the rest of the atrium, thereby treating the atrial fibrillation. We find that in doing that, we have excellent results. Probably 90% of folks who are treated this way are AFib-free in a year's time, probably 80 to 85% in 2 years' time. And that's a good thing because that allows us to hopefully back down on their anti-arrhythm medications, which can have their side effects, and hopefully possibly cut back on need for blood thinners. Another track of patients are those who are in atrial fibrillation, aren't particularly symptomatic, but are concerned about their stroke risk. More importantly, they've taken blood thinners or anticoagulants, but they've had complications from them, GI bleeds or intracranial bleeds. In those folks, what we know is that 90% of strokes come from an area of the heart called the left atrial appendage. And with a 30-minute procedure, again requiring about three incisions, we're able to put a clip on the left atrial appendage that isolates it from the circulation. And when we can do that, we significantly reduce the risk of stroke. And those folks, we can have them essentially right after the procedure is done, stop their anticoagulants if they're on them, so that because we can feel comfortable that their risk of stroke is reduced significantly.
You talked about creating scar tissue and making that maze of sort of scar tissue to prevent that erratic electrical signal. People hear scar tissue, Dr. Wright, and they say you're making scar tissue. Explain
exactly
that a little bit.
Yeah, sure, sure. So again, there are particular drivers that can cause atrial fibrillation. Those drivers exist mostly in the pulmonary veins. And what we try to do is electrically isolate those drivers from the rest of the heart. And I say scar tissue, but what we're doing is creating an environment where, those signals cannot propagate to the rest of the heart and cause atrial fibrillation. In terms of the effects long-term, folks really don't have a problem with it at all. The blood flows through those pulmonary veins like they normally do. It is not something that has a long-term sequela for patients, and folks do just fine with this. In fact, part of this field, I do all sorts of heart and lung surgery, and one thing that's great about the AFib space for me is that these folks do great. They know immediately that when they're in sinus rhythm that they feel great, and the pluses and minuses are well on the plus side.
In just the last few minutes, give the best advice that you have for patients suffering from atrial fibrillation and why they should come to UK Healthcare for their care.
Sure, absolutely. One thing we didn't discuss is that there are some underlying comorbid conditions which can lead to atrial fibrillation: diabetes, hypertension, obstructive sleep apnea, obesity. The key thing for those folks to not just treat atrial fibrillation, but also reduce your risk of developing atrial fibrillation is to control those things. And so it's very important that you work closely with your physicians and really take a stock of your health and your health condition. And again, to prevent the risk of developing atrial fibrillation and also to treat it if you do have it. And then after that, really, it's the question of the future of atrial fibrillation care, I think, is a multidisciplinary approach. With your primary care physician, your cardiologist, and having a team that has all the tools from medications to catheter-based techniques and to surgical techniques all under one roof, where all these physicians are talking to one another, that can generate a plan that is good and appropriate for you as an individual patient. And that's something, you know, we're pretty proud here at UK. We have all those pieces of the puzzle from the medical management to the catheter-based approaches to minimally invasive surgical techniques, which is something that we've been building and developing over the last couple of years and really been building upon.
Thank you so much. It's really great information. For more information on the Gilhart Institute, you can go to ukhealthcare.uky.edu. That's ukhealthcare.uky.edu. You're listening to Advances and Insights with UK Healthcare in Lexington, Kentucky. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.